Good morning. Let us begin by thanking all of our sponsors for this morning's shiur. To thank our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Yair Menachem and Susie Schoenfeld for dedicating all the Shurim and Drushos this month as a schos for Refuah Shlema for Hershel Yisrael ben Pesha Yenta Reizel, Tzvi Meir Halivi ben Saralia, Yocheved bas Sarayeta, Froma Elka bas Fega, Meir Avram ben Fega, Zechariah Dov ben Perel Shira Yisrael ben Chaya, Yocheved Rivka bas Chaya, Shimon Rafal ben Atari Akira, and Kol Chole Yisrael, as well as an aliyah for the Nesham of Susie's sister Esther and Brown Adler, whose yard site was on Rosh Chodesh Iyar. Our week of learning sponsors, Ari and Haley Lichterman, Leilu Nishmas, Haley's mother, Linda Kotin, Rachel Leah, Bas Ruvain Meir, Zichrono Lebracha, and our Daf Yomi sponsors, Ayal and Sarah Steinberg, and the source of continued help for Shulam Zchana Bas Susha, for an ultimate refuah Shleiman, and David and Elizabeth Green, in commemoration of the yahrzeit of David's grandfather, Morton Katziv, Zichrono Lebracha, and the merit of our Talmud Torah, all of the Neshamos Avin Aliyah, the families in the Chama, all those who need a refuah Shavan together with Kol Choli Yisrael, the Chodesh Baruch Hu, Shilei Meretz Hashem, continue to look after our brothers and sisters in Eretz Yisrael, should allow our holy soldiers to be successful, v'chol ma'asei yedehem, and the Meretz Hashem should be zocha to ongoing shalom for Klal Yisrael in the days ahead. But let's see with that, let us begin with a very, very, very exciting daf ahead of us today. Today's daf is Tzadik Tes 99. We are picking up a Meretz Hashem on Tzadik Ches Amud Beis. And we left off actually, good headway yesterday, we left off 2, 4, 6, 8 lines up from the bottom. So once I remember again, we left off with a fascinating machlokas, Rebbe and Rebbe Elazar ben Rebbe Shimon, about the orientation of the shulchans. Remember again, yesterday's staff we established that halacha l'maisa, there was a shulchan that Moshe Rabbeinu built, and 10 additional shulchanos, 10 additional tables that Shlomo HaMelech built and established within the Beis HaMikdash. There is now a machlokes, ultimately again, how these tables were arranged. Rebbe says that they were arranged from east to west. Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon says that they were arranged from north to south. Rebbe learned it out from the menorah, just like the menorah is east to west, so too the shulchanos are east to west. And Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon actually learned it out from the orientation of the aruch. Remember again, as we established in yesterday's daf as well, that the length of the Aron spanned the width of the Beis HaMikdash, with the actual poles themselves arranged along the width, not along the length, as we intuitively often assume. So now the Gemara says, Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, Ligmar Menorah, why doesn't Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, why does he learn out the orientation of the Shulchanos from the Menorah, from the Aron, why not learn it out from the Menorah? Amar lecha menorah gufat safam daram havalancha. Wow. So it turns out, we actually read this yesterday as well. Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon says like this. He actually holds that even the menorah itself was oriented north-south. So we thought, everybody knew it by the menorah, but it turns out that this machlok is by the menorah as well. I elahak sig yaroch osa aron uvanav. But here's the problem, we'll say. If you remember again, the lashon of the pasuk by the menorah seems to indicate that the Ner Ma'aravi, or at least that one of the lamps of the menorah, faced or was right next to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So if you go with an east-west orientation, that makes sense. There's the westernmost lamp. If you go with a north-south orientation, then essentially all of the lamps are in front of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. To which the Gemara says, "Tmitzadid luhu atzude." So what you do is like this. Now again, we'll say, we mentioned this in passing yesterday, but halacha l'maisa, all of the wicks of the lamps faced towards the middle. Faced towards the middle lamp. The middle lamp itself, the wick faced towards the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That is how, according to Elazar ben Shimon, you're able to satisfy this criteria of lifnei Hashem. So it's actually the wick of the middle lamp that faced in towards the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Okay, Disanyo, Amul Pnei Menorah Iru Shiva Saneros. The pasuk says, opposite, right, or Amul Pnei Menorah, facing the menorah, the seven lamps will be lit. Melame, Shayu Mitzadidin Pneim Klapi Neram Soy. This teaches us that when arranging the menorah, it's actually very interesting, all of the wicks were pointed facing inward, facing towards the middle wick. And Bosse, this goes to our theme that we saw in yesterday's daf also about the arrangement of the measuring sticks in Shushan Habira. Everything in the Beis HaMikdash is precision. Everything is about Seder. Because the more holiness, the greater the Seder. The greater the order, the greater the choreography, the greater the scheduling. Amar Gemara says, Amar Rav Nosson says, Mikan She'emtzai Mishubach. From here you see that the middle is praiseworthy. So it's actually very beautiful. The fact that all of the wicks pointed inward to the middle lamp indicates to us that the middle is praiseworthy. So Rav said, there's certainly much to say about this, right? The Rambam writes about this extensively. The Rambam writes that the golden life is to find the derech hamemutza, to find the middle path, right? The golden life is not to live in the extremes, right or left, but the goal is to find the middle path. Of course, the great mystery in life is who defines the middle, right? Who defines the middle path? But in any event, you see the Gemara saying also, Mikan Shem Tzai Meshubach. In other words, why is it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants all the wicks pointed to the middle? Why? Because the Ribono Shel Olam desires moderation. HaKadosh Baruch Hu desires us to find the right middle path in life. Again, that we all subscribe to finding the middle path, I think we'd all agree on. Who defines what that middle path is and how you find it? That's much more complicated. So, Bishon Leman Darim Mizrach Ma'ariv Hainu Dahavi Yasivi Asara Be'esrin. So, Rav said, if you go with the idea that the tables, now again, remember, now the whole table discussion has become much more complicated because it turns out that there's 10 tables, really 11 tables, 10 tables of Shlomo plus the 11th table, the original, I should say, the first table of Moshe plus the 10 tables of Shlomo. So, Bishon Leman Darim Mizrach Ma'ariv, according to the opinion that says that the tables were arranged east-west, Hainu Dahavi Yasivi Asara Be'esrin. Then ultimately, again, we'll say the assumption is that each table was two amas, and therefore halacha lemaisa again you have 10 tables in a span of 20 amas. El leman da'amar, like Rabbi say, in the havamina here, and this is interesting why the Gemara does this, but in the havamina here, the havamina is that the tables are arranged in one long row. Now, we already saw in yesterday's daf that it was not like that, but the Gemara is returning to that havamina. However, el leman da'amar saf al darom, but according to the opinions that says that the tables were arranged from north to south, if that's the case, Yud Bechav Hechi Hava Yasvi, how would you be able to have 10 tables within 20 amas? The space wouldn't work. Furthermore, Vesu Kohanim Hecha Hava Ayli. Furthermore, the tables would have totally blocked off the ability to traverse the area. Furthermore, Vesu Matzino Heshul Chanas Bedarim. Furthermore, you would have ended up having at least 5 of the tables in the southern side of the Beis HaMikdash, which you're not supposed to have. Vesu Shulchan de Moshe Hecha Manachlein. Furthermore, where are you putting the Shulchan of Moshe Rabbeinu in all of this? Well, the Tameich, according to this logic, it's not just a problem with north-south. The Tameich, Leman Damer Mizrach Marav Nami, Shulchan Chamisha Hecha Hava Manachlein. Furthermore, again, according to the opinion that says that it was east-west. Right? Still, again, where did you place the Shulchan of Moshe Rabbeinu? There seemed to be no space for that. Ella, misavris chad darahava, chad darahava, tre darininu. Right? The Gemara says, you're right. What the Havamina is that you're arranging the tables in one long row. That's not the way they were arranged. They were arranged in two rows. Rabbo said, top of Tzadik Test, 99. And in fact, here Rashi has a picture. Right? The tables were arranged in two rows of 5. Again, I will say, it's interesting, like I said before, that the Gemara lapses back into this Havamina, given the fact that we kind of said this yesterday, but okay. So the Gemara says, Bishtam Lamanda Amar Safon Vidarom Shapir. So according to the opinion that says that the tables were arranged from north-south, now the arrangement makes sense. El Lamanda Amar, because again, I will say, if you have two rows of 5. So again, you can see in the picture of Rashi, they're assuming over here the way this worked was 2 rows of 5 with the table of Moshe Rabbeinu in the middle. In the middle, then the spacing works out. El Leman Do'amar Mizrach Umarov. But according to the opinion that says that it was east-west, so listen to this, the math doesn't work. Why? Michti, let's analyze this. Shulchan Kama Mashach Menakosel. Let's see. How far off from the wall was it? Remember again, you can't push the tables across, flush against the wall, and we're going to see why that is. That's based on the next Mishnah. Because when they had to remove the Lechem upon him, you had Kohanim working from both ends. Right? People taking off loaves and people putting on loaves. So you have to access the tables from both ends. So the Gemara says, "So kama mashach menakosel? How far off the wall was the table?" So the Gemara says, "Shtei amos amechza. You need to give space of 2.5 amas." Okay. So mashach menakosel, shtei amos amechza, va'ama didei. Then there's the ama that the table itself takes up. Ushtei amos amechza debeni ubeni. And then you need 2.5 amas of space in between, right? The first row of tables and what we assume would be the table of Moshe Rabbeinu in the middle. Then va'amo. Then you need an amo for the table of Moshe. Then shte amos u'mechza de beni. Then you need another 2.5 amos of space between the table of Moshe and the next row of tables. Then amo didei. Then an amo of the table itself. Therefore ishtachach de ka'achol shulchan palga de amsa b'darom. I will say the problem now is that the tables are going to be extending into the southern side of the Beis HaMikdash. And the south is not the area for the tables. So the math, the Gemara says, doesn't work. To which the Gemara says, yes, it does. Mi savis the shulchan de Moshe ba'adayu havi yasibi? No. The reason why your calculations don't work is because, I will say, if you see like the picture in Rashi, you're putting the table of Moshe in between the two rows of tables. Now understand what that does. That essentially adds on Rabbi Yossi another 6 amos of space, right? No, I shouldn't say it doesn't add on 6 amos of space, but what it does is it requires 2.5 amos in front of the table of Moshe, 1 amma of the table of Moshe, and then another 2.5 amos. So altogether, that takes up. But if you remove that table, the Gemara says, if you remove that table, are you assuming that the table of Moshe was in between the two rows? The Gemara says, lo. The midli lay umanach lay umisisi luhu ledido purta kitamid hayoshev lifnei rabo. So I will say, rather, the table of Moshe Rabbeinu, if you look actually further down in Rashi, you see that Rashi has another image where you see again one table at the top and then in front of two rows of tables. That's how the Shulchan of Moshe Rabbeinu was arranged. Shulchan of Moshe Rabbeinu was arranged ultimately again. Like Tamidim sitting in front of their Rebbe. So therefore, again, that table of Moshe looked like the Rebbe sitting there on top, and ultimately, again, the two rows of tables after us. Rabbi Yossi, now what that does is that gives you back what? That gives you back at least an amma, right? At least an amma, possibly up to at least 3.5 ammas. Either way, all you need is to pull it back a little bit so that it's not extending into the south. And Bosa, I'll just also mention, again, not just the detail. If you notice in the image of Rashi, so Moshe Rabbeinu's table is kind of at a right angle to the other tables. Some have it drawn ultimately as Moshe Rabbeinu's table almost being like parallel to the other tables. But either way, that's not so material for our conversation. Point over here is the Havamina is that Moshe's table was in the middle of the two rows. Kamashmola, no, that Moshe Rabbeinu's table was pulled to the top of the two rows, therefore didn't eat up as much space in the middle. Incredible. Okay, we're not finished. Turn Rabbanan. So the Gemara says as follows. So Moshe, also I'll just mention that the way the Rambam paskins is that the Shulchanos ultimately again of Shlomo HaMelech and everything was arranged east-west, not north-south. So everything arranged east-west. And again, like this orientation that we're discussing over here. Tan Rabbanan. Asar Shulchanos, Asa Shlomo. So we'll say this is incredible. Remember, we mentioned this yesterday. So we've established now that Shlomo HaMelech made 10 tables. So the Shedabas we had in yesterday's daf is, was anything done with those tables? Were they ornamental? Were they decorative? What was done? So the Brisa says, the 10 Shulchanos that Shlomo made, V'lo hayu misadrin ela al Shal Moshe. But they would only put lechem upon him on the table of Moshe Rabbeinu. Amazing, right? There was no bread on the table of Shlomo, only on the tables, no bread on the tables of Shlomo, only bread on the table of Moshe Rabbeinu. Shenemar, the pasuk says, V'esa shulchan asher alov lechem hapanim zav, because it's phrased in the singular. The shulchan, right? The shulchan that was upon which was situated the lechem hapanim. So the fact that it's phrased in the singular indicates to us bread was only placed on one table. Similarly, asher menoros asa Shlomo, Shlomo Melech made 10 menorahs, v'lo hayim malikin ela b'shal Moshe, and they only kindled the menorah of Moshe Rabbeinu. Shenamar menoras hazahav v'neroseha. Ultimately, again, the gold menorah and its candles were lit there to be kindled in the evening. Okay, so singular. So we'll say, so this is the first being. Tanakhama holds, blechem aponim only placed on the table of Moshe, nothing on the tables of Shlomo. Menorah of Moshe kindled, rest of the menorahs were not kindled. Rabbi Lazar ben Shamua disagrees. He says, Omer, al kulam hayim misadrin, no, they put lechem aponim on all of the tables, Shine'emar, Es HaShulchanos, Va'alehem Lechem HaPonim. It says the tables, and upon them was Lechem HaPonim. Uvekulon Hayim Adlikin, and similarly again, there were 10 menorahs, and they kindled them all, Shine'emar, Es HaMenoros, V'Nerosehem, Leva'aram, Kimishpatam, Lifnei HaDvir, Zahav, Sagor. Again, Krabba was saying, so fundamental machlokas, the Levizer Ben Shlomo was saying, they put bread on, it was Lechem HaPonim for all the tables, kindled all of the menorahs. Rabbi Yossi Yehuda Omer, this is very interesting, Lo Hayu Misajun Ela Ashal Moshe. So Rabbi Yossi Yehuda comes along, and he seems to agree with the Tanna Kamma. They only put Lechem HaPonim on the Shulchan of Moshe Rabbeinu. Aye, but what do you do with the Pasek? Ela Ma'ani Mekayim. So here's the problem. The pasuk clearly indicates that halacha lemaisa they placed bread on all of the shulchanos. So what do you do with that pasuk? What do you do with that pasuk? Well, this is incredible. Ela shlosha shulchanos sheva mikdash. This actually refers to three other tables. Well, going to really refers to two other tables that were in the base of Mikdash. What were these two other tables? Shnayim shahayu ba'ulam mibifnim lepesach habayis. There were two other tables inside of the ulam. Again, I'm supposed to remember the ulam was the long rectangular antechamber before you entered into what we call the heichal. So there were two tables that were set up in the ulam. What were these two inside of the ulam? The Pesach Habayis, echad shal kesef ve'echad shal zahav. One was made of silver, one was made of gold. Al shal kesef no sein lechem aponim. So listen to this, b'chnisaso. On the silver one, they would place the new lechem aponim as it was being taken into the heichal to be put on the shulchan. Again, I'm supposed to remember again, baking took place in the chatzar, right? Took place in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. After they baked the loaves, they have to bring the loaves into the heichal itself, right? Into the heichal itself, right? So apparently, again, what they would do is they would enter into the ulam, which is again that long rectangular antechamber. There would be a silver table there. They would place the loaves down on the silver table. Okay, I guess to rest, to regroup a little bit. They would place the loaves down on the silver table. Then after that, they would then take the loaves into the mikdash and go into the heichal and place it on the shulchan. Now again, remember, this is going according to the opinion that says that halacha lemaisa, they only placed bread on the table of Moshe Rabbeinu. So if that's the case, we're trying to figure out why does the pasuk say that they placed bread on the tables, plural, to which the Gemara now is answering, the tables they're referring to are not the 10 tables that Shlomo made, but rather, again, it's two additional tables which existed inside of the Beis HaMikdash. So when they baked the fresh loaves, then bringing them in from the courtyard into the Beis HaMikdash, they got into the ulam, into the antechamber, the rectangular antechamber, they bless you. They placed the new loaves down on a silver table, then picked it up, entered into the heichal, and bless you, and placed that on the shulchan. Now watch this. Now, on the flip side, a week later on Shabbos, when they were removing the old loaves, then what happened? The al shazav bi yitziaso. When they would take on Shabbos, when they would be taking out the old loaves, so what would they do? They would take the old loaves off the shulchan, and then on the way out of the Beis HaMikdash, once again there was a gold table in the ulam, and then they would place the old loaves on the gold table, and then they would exit the Beis HaMikdash. Incredible. Now, again, Rabbi, what do you notice? It's silver on the way in, gold on the way out. Why? Shema'alin bakodesh v'lo moridin. Because we go up in matters of Kiddusha and we do not descend. We only ascend in holiness and do not descend. So therefore, again, that's evident in the fact that we are going ahead and beginning with a silver table and then going ahead and ending with a gold table. Incredible. So therefore, I will say, just to pause here for just a moment, so a really fascinating machlokas. Were all 10 tables of the base, or all 11 tables of the base HaMikdash actually used? First opinion says yes. Halacha l'maaseh, again, all 11 tables had lechem upon it. And he brings the pasuk from Divrei Hayamim that indicates that there was bread on all of the tables. Second, the Beinu Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua says, absolutely not. Bread was only placed on the table of Moshe Rabbeinu, not on the other. Sorry. That first opinion says, bread only on the table of Moshe Rabbeinu, not on the other tables. Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua, bread on all of the tables. Rabbi Yosef ben Yehuda kind of reconciles everything. He says there was only bread on the table of Moshe Rabbeinu. What about the pasuk that says that there was bread on the tables, plural? That refers to two other tables which were situated in the Heichal, in the antechamber. There was a silver table. That's the table upon which the new loaves, when they were being taken into the Mikdash, to be put on the Shulchan, were placed down on. And then there was a gold table. When the old loaves were removed, being taken out to be distributed to the Kohanim, they were placed down on that gold table before being taken out. Incredible. And again, we pick up an important halachic principle along the way. Shemalin bakodesh ve'in moridin. Incredible. So the Gemara says, Echad shalzav bifnim sh'alav lecha aparam tamid. Umenalan de'in moridin. So the Gemara says, by the way, how do you know that you don't go down in matters of Kiddusha? Amar Rebbe de Amar Kra, Vayakam Moshe es Hamishkan, Vayitin es Adonov, Vayasim es Krashov, Vayitin es Brichov, Vayakam es Amudov. So the most interesting raya, the Gemara rooms over by the Mishkan. The pasuk says, Moshe erected the Mishkan, he placed the sockets, he placed the planks, the boards, the brichim are like the boards that went across to stabilize the structure, and once again, Vayakam es Amudov, he erected the pillars. So how does it say in Moridin? If you take a look at Rashi, Rashi's all the way on the bottom of the daf, about 8 lines up from the end. Vayaka Moshe es Hamishkan, Midereisha v'seifa dekra b'loshan hakama, da'amar, da'afila b'tzachas ha'loshan lo hurad, shma mina in Moridin. So the first thing Rashi says, the possibility is, if you notice, the Torah uses a lot of verbs over here. Vayakam, vayitein, vayasim, vayitein, vayakam. The fact that it begins with vayakam and ends with Vayakam indicates to us, Vayakam apparently is called the superior type of Lashon, right? To erect something means really to go and like stabilize it. So the fact that ultimately, again, we go back to that Lashon of Vayakam indicates to us in Moridin, that we do not go down in matters of Kiddusha. Rashi then says another interpretation, V'inami delo sayu echav hakohanim ba'akamas ha'abundim v'ha'adonim shma mina ein Moridin. Shlomo said, this is very interesting. Another possibility that Rashi says is, no one helped Moshe. No one helped him. He did it himself. Now the fact that he did it himself, why? Because since he began the process by himself, had someone else taken over, that would have represented a diminution in Kiddusha, because no one is as great as Moshe Rabbeinu. Therefore, once Moshe Rabbeinu started it, Moshe Rabbeinu completed it. So that's the Gemara's raya of in Moridin, that we do not go down in Kiddusha. I uminalan demalin. So that tells you that we don't go down in Kiddusha. How do we know that we go up in Kiddusha? Uminalan demalin. Rabbi Achabayakov de Amakra, es machto sachatoy ma'ele binafsholsam, the asu osam rikue pachim tzipoy le mizbeach, ki krivom lifnei Hashem, vaykachu viyu la'os lemneiso. So this is incredible. This is by the followers of Korach, Adas Korach. Remember again, Abosai, when everybody wanted to be a Kohen. So what did Moshe Rabbeinu do? He did a whole thing with the Ketores. Everybody brought their fire pan with Ketores. And what ended up happening? So all of the men who brought the Ketores died. But interestingly enough, what happened to their fire pans? The fire pans, which were made of gold, were hammered out into sheets of gold and themselves became the covering, the sheets for the Mizbeach, for the golden altar. So what do you see from here? Betchila tashmishim mizbeach. In the beginning, the fire pans were simply accessories to sacrificial service. Ulebasof, I'm sorry, va'achshav gufo shel mizbeach. And ultimately, again, now they're part of the mizbeach itself. So from here, you see ba'alim bakodesh. We go up in kiddusha. So we go up in kiddusha. They started out as accessories to the Beis Hamikdash, and ultimately, again, become the actual part of the mizbeach itself. It was so dramatic that the example of this is Adas Korach, right? Is Korach's followers, which also tells us that even Korach's followers themselves did have some lishma component to what there was a true desire, ultimately, again, to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Granted, misguided and big mistake, but Lamaisa, there was Kiddusha in their request. Rabbi, if you notice something very interesting about the structure of the Gemara over here, Generally, we're all familiar with this principle of Ma'alin Bakodesh Ve'im Moridin. We ascend in matters of holiness and we do not go down. Remember again, how did we get here? We got here because the Gemara said that there were two tables in the Ulam, in the antechamber of the Beis HaMikdash. One made of silver, one made of gold. The silver one used for the new loaves when they were being taken in. The gold one used for the old loaves as they were being taken out. So remember again, we go up in Kodesh from silver to gold. If you notice, when the Gemara talks about this principle, the Gemara breaks it up into two parts. First, the Gemara says, from where do we know? In Moridin. From where do we know that we don't go down? So the Gemara brings the Raya from Moshe Rabbeinu and the Mishkan. Then it says, from where do we know Ma'alin, that we go up in Kiddusha? See, interestingly enough, from Korach and their followers. So it's fascinating to see, and I've never seen this before, normally it's Ma'alin, Mekodesh, and Moridin. It's one principle. But if you notice again, the Gemara understands it, the Gemara deconstructs it into two. No, there's two principles. Principle number one is in Moridin. We don't go down. Principle number two, ultimately again, is Ma'alin, we go up. And I think that there is a tremendous, tremendous Musar Haskel in this. The Gemara is saying is step one in life is in Moridin. Step one is don't go down. Step one is stabilize and secure your current spiritual footing. Because at the end of the day, if I can't maintain a certain spiritual altitude, right? If I have an inability to anchor myself and to keep myself, you know, in a good place, it's very hard to get traction going forward if you don't know how to spiritually tread water. So step one is Ein Moridin. Don't do things that are going to actively detract from the status of your personalistic holiness. Because if I'm constantly engaged in detractive behaviors, I don't know if detractive is a word, but detractive behaviors, right? Then lemaisa again, you can pour on all the positivity you want, but I'm constantly regressing. So step one is Ein Moridin. Right? It's a tremendous yisod. Ein Moridin. I have to focus on not detracting from my Kiddusha. Then, if I become proficient in Ein Moridin, then what? Then, Ma'alin. Then I could focus ultimately on building. But it's like, otherwise, if you don't have Ein Moridin, it's like building on quicksand. So you could build the most beautiful foundation. You could create the most beautiful edifice. But if you're building on wetlands, you're building on quicksand, anything you build is going to constantly sink. So first, Ein Moridin, what are the behaviors? What are the things that actively detract from my Kiddusha? Stop. Stop, right? Stop. Stabilize those things. Then once you have that, you can build Ma'alin. By the way, it's not a Kiddush. David HaMelech said this in Tehillim. What did David HaMelech say? Sur Meira V'Yaseh Tov. Sur Meira V'Yaseh Tov. Right? There's a progression. First, you have to go ahead and get rid of the Ra. Now again, none of us could ever fully get rid of the Ra. But what it really means is stabilize the Ra. Find a way to stabilize. Find a way to stabilize the Ra. And then ultimately, again, then you can build on that Aseto. First, Ein Moridin. And then ultimately, again, after that, Ma'alin. Incredible. Let's go ahead. There was a beautiful Gemara. The Gemara says, Asher Shibarta V'Samtem Ba'aron. So the Pasuk says, by Moshe Rabbeinu. Asher Shibarta. So again, literally, again, Be'echtov al-Luchos, Es Hadvar Mashayu al-Luchos, Reshna Asher Shibarta, V'Samtem Ba'aron. So this is by the second set of Luchos, right? So by the second tablets, Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, write the second set of Luchos, and then Samtem Ba'aron. So amazing enough, the Gemara says something very interesting. Tani Rav Yosef, Malamed, what do we learn from here? Shaluchos v'shivei luchos munachin ba'aron. That both the broken tablets and the whole tablets were placed in the Aron itself, were placed in the Ark. So again, just to understand the drasha, Hashem says to Moshe, or Moshe saying to Yisrael, ve'echtov al haluchos es hadvar meshayu haluchos rishonim, right? And Moshe says, I will write on the luchos that which was on the first set of luchos, asher shibarta, that I broke, right, or that you broke, v'samtem ba'aron, and you shall place them in the Aron. The them indicates to us what? Then not only is the second set of whole tablets in the Aron, but rather what? Also, the first set of broken tablets are inside of the Ark. Which Rabbi said, by the way, is a remarkable thing. I'll tell you what's even more remarkable. We don't have time to get into this now. This detail is not mentioned in the Torah. Or this detail that the broken tablets were kept forever in the Ark is a nuance that the Gemara infers. You will not find a pasuk in Chumash. That's the honors, we're obviously, we're darshaning a pasuk. But again, If we have time, we'll come back to this. But the Gemara, so we learn a very important idea from this. Mikan, l'tamud chacham sheshachach tamudo, machmas onso, she'en noagin bo minag bizoyon. Rav Yosef says, what do you see from here? You see from here that a Talmud Chacham who forgot his learning, machmas onso means because of circumstances beyond his control, do not act towards him in a disparaging way. Again, Rav Yosef, you shouldn't act towards any person in a disparaging way. What does this mean? It means a Talmud Chacham who forgot his learning, don't think that he has lost his status. Don't think that he has lost his status. Why? Because Rav Yosef, why? Because luchos, v'shivrei luchos nilachen ba'aron. Both the whole tablets and the broken tablets are in the ark. So we'll say, how beautiful and moving is it that essentially the Gemara is referring to a Talmud Chacham who forgot his learning as broken tablets. Lest you think that the broken tablets don't have a place in the Aron, they absolutely do. And I will say, so first of all, besides the fact that you should just know that this Gemara is also a profound, those of us, or those who have had to ever deal with like aging parents or loved ones with dementia or Alzheimer's, it's one of the most heartbreaking things in the world where people who you've spent a lifetime with don't recognize you, don't remember you. And it is so easy to think that that person is gone. That person is gone. They might be biologically alive, but there's nothing really left to them. It's very important to them that's false. Even the Shivrei Luchos, sometimes, for reasons that HaKadosh Baruch Hu only knows, people become broken tablets. But it's always important to remember that broken tablets still retain their Kiddusha. That even a person who, Rahmana Litzlan, is suffering from Alzheimer's, from dementia, the neshama is still in there. The neshama is still there. The guf, the body, the mind may not be working in the same way. But the neshama, the holiness, is absolutely there. And therefore, again, that person always deserves the highest level of respect. And that person always deserves the highest level of honor. Because even the broken tablets are kept inside the Aron. And I must say, there's also another tremendous Moser Haskel in this. This luchos and shivrei luchos menachem ba'aron. You know, there's a concept of Yisrael, afa pi shechata Yisrael. That even though a Jew sins, a Jew still retains his kiddusha. So we'll say, where do you get that from? It's from this. Even broken tablets. Even if you'll say, what are broken tablets? Most of us are broken tablets, right? Most of us have taken a lot of the kiddusha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us, or that we've even earned over the course of a lifetime, and then made terrible mistakes that break our tablets. Sometimes there's a thought that when you break your tablets, you no longer possess your kiddusha. It's important to understand that even the broken tablets have a place in the Aron. Even a Jew who badly messes up, even a Jew ultimately, again, who at the end of the day abdicates his personalistic holiness because of poor life decisions, still has a place in the Aron. The whole luchos, and even when we become broken luchos, we always have a place lifnei Hashem. We always have a place ultimately, again, in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And lastly, the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh says something so beautiful. He says that Shivrei Luchos represents suffering. Represents suffering. He says, it's important for us to remember that when we suffer, our suffering comes from Hashem also. We think that suffering often distances us from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But suffering, if utilized in the right way, brings us closer. But it only brings us closer if I know who it's from, and if I try to figure out what I'm meant to do with it. Then that suffering that often breaks my luchos into so many pieces places me squarely in the Aron of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Rabbi said, all of these incredible lessons. The number one, even the Talmud Chacham who forgot his learning. Even when a Jew loses his or her abilities and faculties, they're still Kaddish. Number two, even when we break ourselves because of our poor life decisions, we still have our Kiddusha and we still have a place before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And number three, when we suffer, which inevitably we do, if we remember that suffering is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and not to punish us, but somehow to heal us, somehow to make us, somehow to help us, and we internalize that, then suffering can become the greatest catalyst to the creation of even a stronger bond with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Sometimes suffering, which breaks your luchos, can put you squarely in the Aron, in the Ark, in the embrace of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if utilized correctly. Incredible. I'm Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish says, Pamin. There are sometimes Amud Beis, Shebitula Shal Torah Zel Yisoda. So this is fascinating. Sometimes listen to this. Sometimes it is the very negation of Torah, bittul Torah. Bittul Torah, that can sometimes become the very thing that upholds and solidifies Torah. Now what does that mean? Dichsiv asher shibarta, like HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, those luchos that you smash, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe, yasher kolchacha sheshibarta, shkoyach, that you broke them. But one second, Moshe Rabbeinu broke the luchos. He was effectively negating Torah. Sometimes it is the very negation of Torah which allows to the upholding of Torah. Now, don't apply this concept on your own, right? But rather, again, look at Rashi this moment. Look at Rashi on Sadiq Tesmond Aleph 99b. Rashi says, Shebitula shel Torah. He goes on, he says, Kigon shemevatel Torah lehotzas hames ulach nosas kalo zehu yisoda. Kilomar mekabel schar, kilo yoshe umiyasta v'osik v'shneemar, asher shibarta, v'lo amrali b'loshon kas, shmamino, hiskimo imo das hashrina, kishabito Torah v'shivron, kevon in iskavim the Torah. Shabbos said, this is fascinating. Hashem gives Moshe Rabbeinu a shkoyach that Moshe Rabbeinu broke the luchos, right? Which is really quite fascinating. So now the Gemara suggests over here that this is teaching us a principle. That sometimes it is the negation of Torah which ultimately again upholds Torah. Now again, why did Moshe Rabbeinu break the luchos? Moshe Rabbeinu didn't break the luchos out of kas. Moshe Rabbeinu broke the luchos because he understood that if he brought down those luchos and he gave them to Klal Yisrael, those luchos themselves would have been an indictment of Klal Yisrael. In fact, the Chanukis HaTorah, the Rebbe of Heschel, the Abt Rav, says that those luchos were like the ksuva. Because Klal Yisrael was married to the Baruch Hu. It's like the ksuva. Well, if you give the ksuva to the kala, then what? Then she's married to the chasim. Which then means if she commits adultery, right, she's in big trouble. However, if you never give the kala the ksuva, don't give the kala the ring, right, then what? They're not married. If they're not married and she goes off with another guy, not good, right? Not good, but at least it's not adultery. Says Rebbe Reb Heschel, the Abt Rav, the Oy Yisrael, says when Moshe Rabbeinu came down, he recognized if he gave them those first set of luchos, that would have cemented the marriage. And then Klal Yisrael essentially went off with the golden calf. Moshe Rabbeinu called an audible, right? Called an audible. And he said, I'm not giving it to them. I'm not giving it to them. I'll smash it, because if I smash it, that'll be this. So sometimes you see that it is the very negation of Torah that goes ahead and provides a future for Torah, that upholds Torah. So that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives Moshe Rabbeinu a shkoyach. Rashi, now what does it mean when the Gemara says this principle? Sometimes it's the negation of Torah, that's the upholding of Torah. So Rashi says in a very concrete way, let's say a person is learning, and then there's an opportunity to do a mitzvah, like burying the dead, like marrying someone off, like some other mitzvah. So what do you do? Well, said, what do? You close your sefer, and you go out. You close your sefer, and you do. Remember, again, the whole point of learning, it's little mold, al menas la'asos. It's learning in order to be able to perform. So therefore, one second, but I'm closing the sefer, I'm negating Torah. So right. Sometimes you negate Torah because sometimes it is quote-unquote the negation that allows for the perpetuation. It's the negation that allows for the perpetuation. So you close the sefer so that you can actually take what you learned, put it into practice, and do. Sometimes you have to stop in order to be able to do. Who taught us that concept? Moshe Rabbeinu. Now Moshe Rabbeinu taught it in a very dramatic way. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu literally created a full stop, right? A hard stop, slammed on the brakes, so to speak, broke the luchos, but it was that cessation, that interruption, that allowed for perpetuation. And from here we see the model in our own lives as well. There's a time to learn, and there's a time to do. There's a time to be in the Beis Medrash, and then there's a time to close the sefer and ultimately go out and take what you've done and bring it into the world. All comes from Moshe Rabbeinu. Amar Reish Lakish. But there's so much to do in all of these Gemaras, it's ridiculous. Amar Reish Lakish. Tamid Chacham Shesarach. That's another incredible Gemara. If a Tamid Chacham, Sarach literally means, the word Sarach literally means putrid, which means if a Tamid Chacham committed an Aveira, did something really terrible, the Gemara says, Ein mevazen also befarhesya. We do not embarrass him publicly. Shene'emar, v'kashal tahayom, v'kashal gam navi imcha alayla, kisal kalayla. So again, as the pasuk says, if you stumble today, right, v'kashal gam navi imcha, and the navi will go ahead and stumble along with you, layla, at night. The Gemara says, Kiso Kalaila. Literally, again, kind of cover it up, right? You know, cover it up like that. That was, what is this saying? Okay, so if you're sarcastic in synagogue, you're going to say, ah, oh, see, it's the rabbis covering for each other. They say, I tell the Chacham, does something else. It's not what it's saying. It's not what it's saying. Now, the Rabbis say what it's saying is like this. It is interesting to see how sometimes people have just a great appetite for seeing the failure of leaders, right? It's not a new thing. I don't know what it is, human nature, right? And sometimes, essentially, when someone in a position of authority fails, there's such a desire to kind of latch onto that and grab onto that. Okay, it's going to keep people in positions of authority, hopefully on their toes, and recognize that there are people always looking out and always waiting for their failure. On a deep level, what is the Gemara saying? If a Talmud Chacham Shesarach, ultimately, again, don't publicize it. They both say, The Gemara also says that there's a chazaka that a Talmud Chacham never goes to sleep without doing tshuva. Talmud Chacham does not end the day. If he did something wrong, he's going to go out and do tshuva before he goes to sleep. So something amazing. So now if you put this all together, what does it mean? It means, what is a Talmud Chacham? Whenever Chazal speak about a Talmud Chacham is not simply someone who possesses information. Anyone can amass information. Anyone can learn a lot of Torah. By definition, a Talmud Chacham is someone who has the full package. And part of the full package is when you make a mistake, clean up your mess. So in the Shabbos HaGadol. When you make a mistake, clean up your mess. A Talmud Chacham is someone who, when he makes a mistake, doesn't leave the mess on the floor, he cleans it up. He becomes about tshuva. Therefore, the Gemara saying over here, Yesh Lakish says over here, that a Talmud Chacham shesarach ein mevazen osa befarhesya. There is no need to publicize his mistake. Why? He made a mistake, he did something wrong, but because he's a Talmud Chacham, what does he do? What separates a Talmud Chacham from the rest of us? The rest of us have said, generally, when we make mistakes, what do? When we make mistakes? What do we make mistakes? Step one, come on, we all know this. Step one, mistake. Step one, deflect, right? Deflect, deny, right? Deflect, deny. I didn't do it, or I did do it, but it's my mother's fault, right? Or you know, I did do it, but it's the rabbi's fault. Or I did do it, but it's my wife's fault. Whatever it is, deny, deflect, right? That's what we do. Then somehow, sometimes we get around, Elul, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Esrei, Yom Kippur, Ne'ilo, right? I get around to cleaning up my mess. That's not a Talmud Chacham. Talmud Chacham makes the mess, owns it, deals with it, and fixes it. Therefore, you're not going to publicize the mistakes of a Talmud Chacham because he is a Talmud Chacham. He has cleaned up his own mess. Incredible. But Amrei Shlagish, Rish Lagish says, both say incredible Gemara. Both, I just want to point out, just you'll keep in mind these Gemaras because when you have a few moments, it is so good to go back over them because there is so much here. But Amrei Shlagish, and Jemosei tells you, by the way, so much of becoming a Talmud Chacham, like we always say, is about taking ownership over your life. And if you make mistakes, stop making excuses. We all make mistakes, and most of us make some pretty big ones. Don't compound the mistake by denying and deflecting. Own it. We spoke about this on Shabbos morning by the Mitzvah, right? Own it. Own it. Just own it. It hurts to own it. It's difficult to own it. But when you own it and when you grow from it, that's where explosive personalistic growth comes from. Incredible. Bar Meir Shlaga says, so this is very interesting. Now, literally it means, if you cause yourself to forget something from your learning, you are in violation of a law. You're in violation of a law, of a prohibition. Shneimar, hishamar lecha u'shmor nafshecha ma'od pentish kachas hadvarim. Literally, again, be careful. Guard your soul exceedingly, lest you go ahead and forget any of these things. Rabbi Avin, Rabbi Loi, don't Rabbi Avin, Rabbi Loi. Kamakum shneimar hishamar pen va'al ino elalosase. Whenever the Torah says these lashonos of hishamar pen and al, it's always a law. Ravina Amar, Ravina says, Hishamar upen, shnei lavininu. Ravina says, it's two lavininu. And what this means is, if you learn something, and you forget something that you learned, you are in violation of two lavin. You're like, oh no. Right? So say, that means on any given day, most of us are in violation of both. Now again, we're going to qualify it in just a moment. Ravina says, shnei lavin. It's three lavin. Shnei amar. Now you might have thought one second that this is true even if I forget something just as an ones. I don't mean to forget it. I just forgot it as a result of anything else that was going on in life. So the Gemara says, Tamud Lomar, Upenya Surah Milavavcha, Bemesirein Baliba Kasamandavar. So Rav said, it's very interesting. So the Gemara says over here as follows. The Gemara says that halacha l'maisa is talking about someone who purposely forgets something. Now what does this mean? So in other words, if you learn something and you forget it because perhaps you're assuming massive amounts of information in a very small time, like you're part of a program called Daf Yomi, right? So you are ingesting massive amounts of information within an hour, less than an hour's time. Okay, I'm going to forget stuff. That's not what it means. What it means over here, the Gemara says, is when are you in violation of Milav? B'masirem melibo hakasov medaber. When you purposely cause yourself to forget things. Now, people say, what does that mean? What does that mean? They will say, we know exactly what that means. We learn things all the time that I know that I need to inculcate within my own life, like a number of the life lessons we just learned today, and I'm going to actively go out of my way to forget them. Right? Why? Because I don't want to have to hold myself to a higher standard. It's good early in the morning, 4 minutes left to davening, it's a good time to be honest with ourselves. We actively forget, cause ourselves to forget things every single day because I just don't want to hold myself to the standard. It's the same reason that we're lackadaisical about a lot of things in our ruchnius. Because I just don't feel like pushing myself. I just don't feel like it. I just don't feel like it. So we cause ourselves to actively forget stuff. The Gemara says, you forget stuff because Daf Yomi goes too quickly, can't hold on to all the information, that you for sure get a pass on. But you learn life lessons that you know you need to keep with you, that you know you need to inculcate within your personal, your spiritual personality, that you need to, and you don't do it, that's where there's culpability. That's where there's liability. And every single day that goes by, that I purposely don't take with me the lessons that I learned and I know I need to take with me, but I purposely don't, the Gemara says, there's not one love, there's not two loves, there's three loves associated with intentionally forgetting and leaving behind information that I know I need to be a successful Jew. Incredible. You might have thought that this is even. Now, literally, Takhala Mishnaso means that just like, there's just too much information. It's just too much, too overwhelming. I can't absorb all the information. Talmud Lomar, rock. Therefore, the pasuk says rock. Rock, remember again, is a miot. So obviously, again, like we said before, if at the end of the day, I just simply can't hold on to all the information because there's just too much going on, there's not culpability for that. Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Amitai Bayu, Torah Nitna Ba'arban is beautiful. Torah was given over in 40 days, v'neshama notzra ba'arbon, and the neshama is fashioned in 40 days. Now remember again, for the first 40 days of pregnancy, the pregnancy is considered to be maya ba'alma, water, it's nothing. After 40 days is when the pregnancy takes on, we'll call it a chalos life. There's considered to be a life form that's there. So isn't this beautiful? Torah was given in 40 days, and ultimately life is created in 40 days. It's so beautiful. Whoever guards his Torah, which means if you go out of your way to retain your Torah, your neshama will be guarded. But if you do not go out of your way to guard your Torah, to hold on to your Torah, in other words, to retain your Torah, your soul will not be guarded either. So we'll say, by the way, as you always speak about, this is not a punishment. It's a cause and effect. If you go out of your way to guard your Torah, then your neshama will be safeguarded as well. If you do not guard your Torah, you do not hold on to your Torah, then your neshama is, you know, you've left the front door open, you left the front gate open. Anything and everything could get in there, and there's no telling what the spiritual quality of your life is going to be. Let's finish up. Mashallah Adam Shemasa Tsipar Dror Li Avdo. This can be compared to a person who gave a Tsipar Dror. Tsipar Dror is like a bird, a beautiful bird. So the king says to his servant, I'm giving you this bird to watch. Now you might think that if the bird gets away, all you have to do is give me the replacement value of the bird. Not true. I'm going to take your life from you. In other words, the king is saying the bird is very precious to me. You know, the value of the bird might not be a lot, has a lot of sentimental value to me. Because of that, if you lose it, you are in big trouble. So to HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I gave you a beautiful neshama to watch. It's not that the neshama is expensive to me. I can make as many neshamas as I want. But it's a beautiful neshama. I've entrusted that neshama to you. If you guard your Torah and therefore build your neshama, beautiful. But if you don't take care of that most important possession, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, for that, I will hold you accountable. Let's say, Shkoyach, stop over here today. Incredible. All right, have a great day, everyone.